Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everybody, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Rachel Shackleton.
Hello.
And Josh Brown.
Hello.
I'm going to go around the table from the right to the left.
You just like to mess this up. I have it in my head every single time where you're going to go. You always throw a curveball, don't you?
A little bit of a curveball. I did this yesterday on yesterday's podcast as well, just to, you know, keep things fresh.
Madness.
And interesting. So in the never-ending quest to find individually interesting podcast topics, I thought we'd talk about open world games a little bit because they're one of the most profitable, if not the most profitable franchises genres in gaming, and because Red Dead Redemption 2 was this massive talking point last year, I kind of wanted to get your guys' opinions on the open world genre, its popularity, where you see it going from here.
Because it's kind of the genre of the generation, in my opinion. You know, like the biggest games this year have mostly been open world games. We've seen established franchises move more towards that kind of area, and I think some have done it very well, some have done it very bad. And Red Dead Redemption 2 is certainly a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Red Dead Redemption changed everything, in my opinion.
Well, okay, so that's the thing. In fact, no, Rich, you should do your opening gambit. What do you think?
Oh, what makes you think I have an opening gambit?
You've got some gambits.
I guess I could open up with the really controversial one of being like, I love an open world game, but are you not just a bit tired of them?
Well, that's what I was going to say, because like if you ever roll those things together, because Rockstar's whole thing with Red Dead 2 was that they said this is going to change open world gaming forever, and I don't think it did necessarily. Not in the same way as something like Breath of the Wild did, or looks to potentially do it, but we can come back to that there. In terms of open world fatigue, do you have that at all, or have you not yet?
Kind of. I had it more a few years ago when everything was so homogenous, but now I think with the two examples you just mentioned there, Breath of the Wild, oddly enough, ironically enough, breathe new life into the genre, guys.
Oh, 2016 catchphrase.
But went there.
It did that, and then Red Dead Redemption 2 for me really reinvigorated my love for
these worlds. Did it redeem it? Did it redeem your love? Did it?
Yeah.
Did it redeem it?
I don't know. I don't know what kind of pun you're trying to make, Erin.
Is it red?
It's a bit,
died.
Bad banter for this podcast. Not, I think. I think we're above this.
I'm
just kidding.
No. Keep going.
For me, Red Dead Redemption 2 was like this huge, huge anomaly because nobody has 4,000 staffers to work on an open world game for 8 years and creates this level of detail. And I don't think we'll see that replicated anytime soon. Mm-hmm. But between that and Breath of the Wild, I'm all back. I'm back
in. So that's the thing, though. We're trying to drill down what Red Dead 2 brought to the table. Like, yes, they have an exorbitant amount of resources and staff and all that kind of thing. But I still thought, because they basically, the way that it seemed when we were going into Red Dead 2, seemed like it was going to be one giant story and you'd just been poking, prodded it wherever you want and it would somehow know where you were and it would just kind of, you would just get this story delivered to you even though you weren't necessarily chasing icons on a map.
Yeah.
And then you get it and you play it and you are chasing icons on a map. So I didn't think that it was as revolutionary as it could have been, but I'm looking for you guys to tell me I'm wrong.
Rich had the first response there. What do you think?
I haven't actually played a lot of Red Dead Redemption 2. I finally got it at Christmas time, so I haven't played a lot. But yeah, from what I can tell, it's the little details that it sort of added. We've had a few games in the past, like obviously GTA 5 being one of them, that had all these little tiny details. But Red Dead just sort of turned that up to 11. That's my sort of first impressions, is that's what it does, that's what it excels at.
Yeah.
But as far as, you know, revolutionizing the genre, I don't think it revolutionized.
I think they're kind of like applying the level of care and attention you would have to a linear experience to an entire open world. Like every like township, every character, every piece of clothing, everything has this meticulous sense of detail to it, and they can only do that because they have the amount of money and resources to pour into it.
Yeah.
Do you think that's the level, that's the revolution they were referring to?
Yes.
Like this level of
definitely
quality?
I think everything sort of felt purposeful in that world, and I've talked about it earlier on Chatty Faces, which will go up at the end of this week, they contextualize everything so everything has meaning, and it makes you want to do those menial tasks like you just pie off in other games. For me anyway, there's only a couple times
pie off means too much.
Oh,
hard means for our American audience.
Sorry, this is the Geordie slang slipping through.
That's not a worldwide thing.
I don't think. I mean, Americans can let us know, but I don't think people around the world was to pieing something off.
You know, anyway. You know the phrase to like live in an open world, like you live and breathe, like you really feel a part of that world. That doesn't usually happen to me, and it only really has in Red Dead Redemption, The Witcher 3, and Breath of the Wild, where you do feel a part of something larger, and you're not just following icons. I know there are a couple of times where you are just following icons to get to the next waypoint, but it doesn't feel like that when you're in the game. Like, it feels like you might start to go to there, but then you might get distracted by the stranger who comes up, or you might see a shack in the distance, then you investigate that, and that's part of the journey. It's like Breath of the Wild for me was never about the destination, it was always about the journey to that destination. That was always far more compelling than me, and I think Red Dead Redemption does the same thing in that the end mission is still good, but it's sort of what you do in each individual's sort of own experience to get there that's more important.
I think is that what you were going to
You reminded me when I was playing through Breath of the Wild back in March 2017, which seems so long ago
what
now.
What a lovely time that was.
I literally nicknamed it Breath of the Distractions because I feel like that was so strong in that game. It was like you would want to go to from A to Z, but you would have to go through B and C and D.
I think it's worth saying with Breath of the Wild, the thing that I don't know if I would say that Breath of the Wild revolutionized open world gaming, but it did make me think that that whole open world was one giant level. Like, it was so like easy to just drink that whole thing in. You would dip into like a shrine puzzle for a while, you'd go and get a Korok seed or whatever, and you just took all of it in, and you weren't really thinking about like, oh, I'm going from market to market or whatever. The only thing that I think is sort of like a checklist in Breath of the Wild is the towers. That's like the only thing to sort of like itemize and go, okay, I need X number of towers, I'm going to go pinpoint and tick them all off. But apart from that, you were just taking the whole thing in, and like lots of people over the years have referred to Nintendo's guiding hand principle of like they guide you towards things without necessarily making you aware that that's what you're taking in, and I thought Breath of the Wild was like the perfection of that.
There's one subtle difference in Breath of the Wild compared to other open world games, and it's that it still has the kind of conventional towers that you climb to get a lay of the land, but it doesn't just automatically put things on your map. You have to like look and you have to do that yourself. So you're like, oh, that looks kind of cool over there, I wonder what's in there. So you put it on the map yourself, and then you find it either in 5 minutes or in 10 hours time. So it's always you actively trying to seek something out, and not just the kind of game being like, here's 10 things you can do, just go do them if you fancy it.
And that's what I thought Red Dead was going to get away from.
Whereas, I mean, do you not think Red Dead's a lot more subtle about it? I mean, I haven't, I've very much been playing it linearly so far. But to know that it has all this under the surface, makes me think it's a much more sort of subtle.
In places, because like, but that's the thing. Like, you do have blips on the mini map, you have icons, you have mission markers on the main map, and like I said, apart from the four main guardians that you chase down in Breath of the Wild, like you're just drinking that world in whichever direction you want, and you'll just stumble into random interactions with like enemy camps or like collectibles or whatever, and you just take it in as you go. You don't really think, okay, now I'm doing this part of this game. You just take it all in. And I kind of thought Red Dead was going to have more of that when they were talking about like this seamless interaction. I was like, oh, all of it's just going to be served up to me, but I'm not even going to realize where one part ends and the next thing begins. And they sometimes do that. You'll kind of go from like a bar fight into a train robbery into a next thing, and it's like, okay, this random dynamic interaction turned into a story mission and I didn't even realize it. That stuff's great.
That's great.
And I kind of thought they would do like way more of that. And I guess, I don't know if I think of Red Dead 2 as revolutionizing open world gaming, but I do think if you think of last year's stuff like Assassin's Creed Odyssey or Just Cause 4 or even Spidey, like they're still very formulaic. Like, Spidey got, for me, was really tiring towards the end in terms of of mopping up, not the story, sorry, the open world stuff, going like, I want to do you know, all the, like, I could call them bandit camps, but like all the enemy things. Like, what do you guys think of that? Like, in terms of looking back on that?
See, don't ask me, because I love Spider-Man PS4. I flipping love it.
Oh, I love it as an overall game, but like in terms of like those parts of it, like, did you enjoy like just kind of being like, okay, this is what I need to do, and then this is
this. I've been breaking it up. So I've been doing bits of the story and then going and doing some collectibles and then opening some of the map, then doing more stories. Okay. So,
Well, I'm with you, Rich, because I really love that game. I think we debated this. Like, oh, yeah, of course. I'm just saying. But when I was doing the story missions with the side missions, it didn't bother me. I thought, oh, this is a nice distraction. This is still really fun to do. It was only when there were no story missions left and all I was left with was the side content, which is kind of fair enough, but all I was left with was doing the same missions over and over again. And I was kind of like, have we not evolved past this at some point? And I think Red Dead Redemption has.
Okay.
But with Spider-Man, you know, in theory, though, it is like, it's an open world game, yes, but it's a story. Like, once the story's done, there's a certain player base who are like, right, story's done, brilliant, move on, let's go get Red Dead or whatever. Whereas there's people like maybe myself and yourself who are like, must go catch all of the pigeons. So you feel like you need to finish every single little thing, but really, it wasn't really made for the majority of people to want to do that.
I'm with you, that's really interesting.
Because like, I do think of myself as that type of person. Like, I want to get through the story because I'm always terrified that spoilers are going to arrive at my door.
You've got 20 other things to play as well.
Yeah, there's that. But like, I was like trying to like, focus on one game. And something as big as Spidey, I'm like, this is my life until I get it finished. And I'll get through the main story, but I'll do side stuff alongside it. But if you did prioritize the main story like to a certain degree, then you're only left with that checkbox stuff afterwards.
Yeah.
That's the stuff that I think is fatiguing. Mm-hmm. And I think that comes from the Ubisoft formula. And it was the one part of Spidey that I thought they played quite safe, considering that, like, well, it's not that the story was like massively like going in whole new directions or whatever, you know, when you think about how an open world game is done, like there's a certain formula, and again, like it's associated with Ubisoft, but that formula was like definitely in Spidey, whereas it's definitely not in Zelda. And another example I thought of from last year is God of War, because although God of War is an open world game, kind of technically, it has that massive open hub world. When you start thinking about it, it's more like authored levels, but they just bolt on, they're stitched onto that middle hub. And that reminded me of Arkham City, because you have Gotham, it's open, but every level is a separate bit you're jumping into, and you
almost
do that
like
whole level and go back.
It
again.
Has the illusion of being open.
And I think that's kind of like the wider conversation is like, do you think that, because there's so many games that are open world now, it's like the vast majority of AAA games have these massive open worlds, or open levels anyway, and it's like, is the open world formula just gaming now, and for a AAA game, and like the way that like markers are like sort of spread across a huge environment, is that just the standard?
I like that style more that you mentioned there about like God of War, where it's sort of wide linear. It's not a true sandbox
like
open world. What Naughty Dog do, exactly. And I think a lot of developers are sort of going down that direction. I think it kind of works more. I'd rather have that than every game just be open world but not be able to do it as detailed as an Assassin's Creed now or Red Dead Redemption. That middle sort of area I want to fall away, because I don't want these kind of empty sandboxes that aren't really There's just space. I'd rather have a densely kind of wide linear game like God of War or Uncharted that I can sort of explore and get kind of the feeling of adventure and yet still have it be authored and everything be significant.
Yeah, because that's, I mean, would you guys think of God of War as an open world game, or because of the way that it's directed, like it is very linear.
Yeah.
Like you can't really branch the story or whatever. Like there are collectibles, but it's all part of that.
Yeah, I personally wouldn't call it an open world game. I'd call it a linear story, in my opinion.
I think the way that it's like, the way that it handles its content, it is like hashtag content, what we do. But the way that it handle its mission design and everything is like it is the illusion of an open world. And like to go back to the Naughty Dog point, like Uncharted 4, even The Last of Us has these big like suburban areas, and Uncharted has the massive bit where you go on safari for a bit, but it's still funneling you towards an eventual endpoint. And so I kind of like, there's a couple of like quotes, like Eiji Onuma, who worked on Breath of the Wild, said that once you go open world you can't go back. And Hideo Kojima said that about Death Stranding as well, with Phantom Pain and how Death Stranding would go. So that's kind of the wider question, is to like, do we think that like going forward there'll just be a refinement of like that way of expanding, like as the industry's got bigger, levels get bigger, games get bigger, and the open world genre is a base, like a base point or whatever, or you can apply it to the formula. Is an open world game defined by its formula, or can things with open world elements be open world games?
My God, that's a big question. That is a huge question.
Cheers, mate.
I think so. But I think it also has a lot to do with where the industry is and what consumers and fans expect as well, because you expect a lot of bang for your buck now. You expect sort of big experiences, and I think this allows developers to do that in a way. Like all the content in God of War is sort of important, and yet you do have that element of freedom, even though if Rich, you don't necessarily agree it's an open world game. No, I'm just saying it's like sort of they've added those elements in. I do think we're going to go down that route even more. What do you think, Scott?
Well, I mean, I think it's strange, because like, even though I wouldn't say Red Dead 2 revolutionized things, it didn't make me think of the genre the same way that I do after I played Breath of the Wild. I was like, man, this changes everything.
Yeah.
This whole map is a level, oh my God, and all that kind of thing. But it did make me think that the Ubisoft's approach and the Spider-Man approach and the formulaic checkbox approach, the collectibles and all that kind of thing, that stuff is outdated. And that stuff makes me do that exact noise and go, oh God, I don't know if I can all this stuff up.
Variety is the spice of life, and I feel like there's three big games that we've just been talking about. Well, one was from 2017, but the three, basically, Spider-Man, God of War, and Red Dead. Mm-hmm. They're all very different, but I feel like they each had... there's going to be someone who's like, this one's my favorite, this one's my favorite.
Yeah.
Basically, where I'm going is... I'm going to get to your point. You may say it's outdated, but in my opinion, I liked Spider-Man style the most.
Oh, really?
The thing is, I love a list. I work at What Culture. I love a list of things that I can just go and
like
just get
RPG
them all.
List.
But then I also love just sort of exploring as well and seeing where the wind takes me or the seeing where the west takes me. I don't know.
But
there will always be a market for each of these types of games. And I feel like you're like, oh, is this where open world is going? Is this all we're going to get? No, because people like different kinds of games.
I don't think it's necessarily one or the other. But I think in terms of like the way that the industry moves forward, like they're trying to tick the boxes. Obviously, open world games, GTA, are massively successful, and you can like shove secrets and Easter eggs and reasons to replay certain levels or areas or whatever into these massive games. And the bigger they are, the more that assumedly people will play them for a long time. I'm just kind of curious like where the hell things go like from here.
This is going to sound potentially a bit cynical, but I think open world games are a move towards open world kind of styles of games allows developers to sort of. It's a nice base to build extra content off as well, because obviously now when a game comes out, it's never really just the game and then see you 2 years for the sequel. It's like he's an expansion pack, he's some DLC or whatever. And I think having that base allows you to plug things in.
Like it's safe.
Kind of like a safe, and then you can just bank it in. Like Horizon Zero Dawn had this really lush open world, and then you got the extra part in Frozen Wilds. Mm-hmm. Even Lost Legacy to an extent, even though it was a completely different thing, that was sort of its own self-contained sandbox compared to Uncharted.
Yeah, well, that had like that massive hub bit of it where you could go around and solve those little puzzles and get certain collectibles and stuff. I think when we were talking about, like, it's weird because I'm trying to get the delineation between, like, is the sheer scope that's impressive, or like the scale matters as well? Other way around, sorry. Is scale just impressive if it's a massive open world, and then it's like how much detail is in that world itself? Because I remember when the first Just Cause was a thing.
Yeah.
And same with Assassin's Creed Odyssey. It's like these maps are humongous, and you kind of look at them and go like, I'm never going to see
every
nook and
cranny.
It's a turnoff. Yeah, exactly.
It's what ultimately stopped me from playing Assassin's Creed Origins for more than a few
years. What I was going to say. It's like, have you ever like come across an open world game where like it feels like it's too much and you're never going to see all of it?
For me, that's kind of Just Cause 3 and I guess 4. Like, when that used to be such a badge of honor, like this next game is 3 times bigger than the last game.
It's scary.
Now it's scary. Now I look at that and think, I'm never going to see even half of this.
Right.
Why? And you've got so many back in the day. I'm not even that old, and yet I'm saying back in the day. Back in 2010, when these games were more of a rarity, you could just live off one for a long time. Mm. But now maybe it's just the nature of this job we do. There are so many big, huge sandbox games coming out that you just kind of have to accept. I'm never going to see all of this. I'm never going to get invested as much as I want unless I hammer them all to death. So maybe I don't want the worlds to be as big. Maybe I want them to be a bit smaller,
that's
a bit more detailed.
Like Red Dead's world, I don't think it's not dauntingly massive. Like once you start, you can go all the way down to Saint Denis and then along to Blackwater and then back up again, and you kind of get a good feel for the size of the map. And you start plotting out like, okay, it's 2 minutes to get to Valentine, it's whatever, and you sort of like take it all in. And you start, it's same way as those old GTA games. Like I love like GTA 3, Vice City, and San Andreas, because you can map out those maps, you get to learn them really well. And I kind of think that's what Rockstar lost a bit with GTA 4 and 5. They're too big, especially 5.
No, I agree.
That's fascinating.
For me, they didn't, like in GTA 3, well, those original trilogy, I would know the stunt ramps and the shortcuts and the alleyways and how everything connected, and I could map it out in my head. And it's like it's probably just amount of time spent in 4 and 5, even though I did put a lot of time into those games, but they never clicked the same way.
This is incredibly fascinating to me, right?
Good.
Because one of the points I was going to make was how GTA 5 especially was a city that I knew every street of. I didn't have to look at the map. More or less the whole thing. I obviously didn't know what was down every alley.
Right.
If I had to get to a point, I would never have to look at the map. I would know which streets to take to get there the fastest.
I was like improvising the whole
thing. Man, because I thought that was one of its strengths compared to something like Watch Dogs, which I put in a similar amount of time in the main campaign. If you threw me in a street in there, I would not know how to get to a specific waypoint or a specific structure. Mm-hmm. Whereas in Rockstar games especially, I think they do that so well.
I would argue
that they didn't lose it by going that bit bigger.
The thing with that is, and that's more of a specific thing for like city-based open world games, is that Watch Dogs is trying to be a one-to-one recreation of San Francisco. Whereas with GTA, they always take liberties with it and like they crunch different landmarks together and stuff, and that kind of gets around that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, like I guess in terms of games like being too big, like do you have that now where it's like where's it going to stop? Like, do you think that Red Dead is a nice mix of I am actually going to get the most out of this game kind of thing?
Hey folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues. your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
I think so.
I play a lot of MMOs, so I'm kind of used to games being large.
You're used to an entire world on the side of the screen.
But then when I'm getting into an MMO, I sort of know, like, you know, this is a massive investment. Whereas with a console game, I'm sort of in a phase at the minute where I'm like, I'm into smaller games at the moment, which is maybe why I haven't done that much in Red Dead. Please don't hurt me.
I think it's worth...
It's intimidating, it is.
Yeah, that's the thing. And there was a quote from... it was one of the guys that's working on Cyberpunk 2077 said that they've made a whole point of all of Cyberpunk being hand-designed, none of it's procedural, because if you delve into like the dev side of making a lot of open-world games, they'll use programs like SpeedTree, which just populates things with lots of like fauna and whatever. Or flora, sorry. And flora, fauna...
Fauna and flora.
Yes, but they'll do things to generate these sort of landmasses. And if you look into Ubisoft, like they have different like landscape generation like algorithms and programs that they use. It's like Steep, the snowboarding game, was like an offshoot of one of the other Far Cries that became a thing, whatever. But they figure out different ways of doing these huge worlds. And I kind of think it's interesting looking at, like, you know, teams trying to do handcrafted open worlds. Like, they're such a massive thing. But if the discerning gamer is looking for a certain level of quality and detail in that massive expanse, then sheer expanse in space itself is never going to be enough.
I think that's why the fatigue has sort of worn off a bit, because I think more developers are really trying to push for that now. Even Ubisoft games themselves, like you said, the recent Assassin's Creed, for me it was Far Cry 5, even though I didn't love that game, I loved being in that world, and like the way that sort of big level was designed was really fascinating to me. I thought they made the most, even though that was a huge game, they kind of made the most of the space, and even though some of the activities might have been similar, it was still a huge joy to sort of explore it and discover this environmental storytelling and sort of have unique places to kind of visit. What I don't like about open world games is when the sort of different levels. I hate the idea of graduating from one area to another and then never going back and revisiting that place. Like, it just give me levels then. Oh, I don't need it to be one connected thing.
Well, that kind of is the wide linear thing, but that's them trying to retain the hand-on kind of quality.
If it's part of a story and you're like, oh, you've been banished from Horizon.
Yeah,
so many games lie about that as well, where they're just like, you do this last mission, you'll not get to come back, and you always get to come back. Like, that was like a thing at the end of Horizon. It was like, make sure that when you go into this...
I still haven't finished it.
So good.
I will finish it.
So I've rounded up a few games for the rest of 2019, and I think the general question I was going to ask, which as I say these games, is whether you guys think that they'll offer something new to the open world formula or whether you think they'll play by the formula. Mm-hmm. So first up is Days Gone. I think this is entirely formulaic.
Ooh, yeah, I'm really worried about this one.
Not saying that the formulaic approach is bad, it's very bankable, and like Rachel was saying, if you have an itemized list of stuff to do, that makes it way easier to get bang for your buck.
People like that.
Yeah, you know exactly where to go. Rachel, what are your thoughts on Days Gone?
I have no feelings towards it, to be honest. I mean, it would be nice. It'd be nice to roll around on a motorbike, but I don't know. I think it's just I can't really think about Days Gone. I think I'm just so sick of zombies. Mm. Saying that, though, Last of Us 2.
Clickers and all that. Last of Us got way more of a character focus than Days Gone with its zombie bashing.
You know what? Not to derail this before we've even started it, but The Last of Us 2, that's an interesting one for me because how far they're going
to
push that. Yeah, like Naughty Dog over the past few releases have pushed the wide linear thing quite far, and I think one of the biggest things people enjoyed about The Last of Us 1, apart from the great story, was those moments of downtime where you could explore a whole kind of like neighborhood or a couple streets of a neighborhood and see what happened. So I think with The Last of Us 2 we're going to see that, in my opinion, sort of expanded upon, and that might be even close to an open world game as Naughty Dog has ever done.
Well, that was kind of another permutation of like where do open world games go from here if they are going to leave the formulaic stuff behind or try and minimize it a bit, then you get stuff like what Naughty Dog were trying to do in The Last of Us, like that suburban area, like I mentioned. Like, they do just take the reins off for a bit and just go, okay, go wherever you want, eventually, you know, go down the road eventually. Yeah. But you have a whole bunch of houses and there's all these different stories, and like that's the wide linear thing that they then put in Uncharted. And so, like, that makes me think that the future of open world is maybe to just accept that it's a natural part of AAA games and then you see what else you can do with it. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I'm kind of curious with that. The complete opposite is Anthem, which I think will be another sort of
one
for me.
Anthem is open world, right?
Yes. But I mean, it'll be very formulaic. I mean, very list-based, which might be fine.
I mean, it's pretty much just going to be a loot grind the simulator, isn't it? But I don't know. That's the kind of game I feel like the strength of Anthem is going to be in its exploration.
Flying around does look fun. You know, it's never not fun.
When was the last game that had like freeform flying in an open world?
No game has
ever
done
that. Like, other than GTA, you can just grab a plane. How did anything just let you take off and fly? That was one of the only things that I liked about the Superman game, the movie tie-in, the one with what's his chops, Brandon Routh. The game was bad, but like you could just kick off the ground and fly, and you just watch Metropolis go like tiny below you. And I was like, this is just what it's like.
I remember booting up DC Universe Online and doing the same thing and being blown away. Like, I can fly across the city.
Their whole marketing spiel for Anthem should have just been like, do you like Superman? Do you like flying?
Do you like flying?
Because that with a robot. And like, I mean, like the whole idea of like flying in an open world and just kicking off the ground and exploring like the vertical as well as the horizontal, that's something else that is in Cyberpunk. They said they developed a whole city as well.
Oh my God, lots it's of buildings, be good, isn't it?
Because they said that like they were trying to make comparisons to the size of the world in The Witcher, and he said it was the CDPR said it was very hard to compare the two because The Witcher is very horizontal, whereas Cyberpunk's going to be very vertical because you have a very massive city that just stretches way up into the clouds.
Fan of that.
I'm a huge fan of that. But again, it sort of makes me, it brings everything in. It's like how much is going to be authored, how they're going to deliver the content to you, are you going to be chasing mission markers, blah, blah, blah.
Well, that's we'll the thing. I'm not too keen on Anthem, to be honest, but the few trailers I have watched, when they go up into the air or they go under the water, there is a great sense of kind of verticality to that world that I really hope is exploited.
Underwater thrusters are drastically underused in gaming, and I want more. Yeah. You know that bit when he goes underwater and he's like technically using boosters, but he's underwater?
Yeah, that's awesome.
What is that? Iron Man does it. Just give me more
of
that.
You know who else did it?
Go on.
The Marines in Call of Duty Black Ops 3 and 4. You know, I'm not saying that makes it the best game of all time, but it's pretty good.
Yeah, I guess you can still do some of that in Black Ops 4. I honestly can't think of enough underwater thrusters, and I miss them. I want more of them, even though I never really had them.
Can we title this podcast that, please? No. I miss underwater thrusters.
No, we'll click on that.
Click on it.
There's intrigue.
There is intrigue. The next game I have down is The Division 2, which again, I mean, that's Ubisoft, so I don't think they'll be changing a whole lot.
But the world of The Division 1 was so good. good. That the was the world of The Division 1, like walking around in that kind of snowy,
it's New York, isn't
perpetual
it?
Black Friday in New York. I thought it was great. I thought it was.
It was like a post-apocalyptic New York where the whole point, the whole thing was that a whole bunch of terrorists had poisoned money so that everyone who went to Black Friday suffered, which is a nice little comment on consumerism. And so the whole, everyone was all ravaged and then street gangs took over.
Yes.
And so it was a nice idea. And when me and Jules played it, I liked that they sort of fleshed out their enemy types and stuff. But in terms of hoovering up that whole open world, I don't think it'll be a siphoned off linear authored level. I think it'll be one massive thing, and occasionally you'll, you know, have random firefights and stuff.
Yeah.
So I'll be amazed if Ubisoft are the ones to sort of provide anything new.
I quite like that. Even then though, in the first one you did have that big open world, but then when you went into a mission, or at least some missions, you would often go into kind of a self-contained little area that you couldn't access.
One of them. What do you think of The Division 2, Rich? Are you going to be listing it up? The list division. That's the best I can do with that.
I don't know. I haven't really looked into The Division too much. I know that Ubisoft are promising that it's going to fix some mistakes that one made. So maybe I would love something to completely change it up and to make me interested in it. But at the minute, it doesn't look like it's going
to
be.
I'm curious as to whether they fixed the fact that everyone could queue behind each other. Because I don't know if you guys saw the thing on launch day.
Oh, I was there.
You were in the queue.
I was there.
Nice quality.
It's just everyone
online.
Everyone online just waiting so they can sign their little papers. It was like a queue of like 20 players. One guy doing jumping jacks, so you couldn't get through the door. It was a lovely thing. The next one I got down is Rage 2, which assumedly it's kind of got a big vehicle focus, but I would assume that they have to have more authored sort of levels that you can sort of beam into, whether it's instance or whatever, because the combat is very Doom.
Well, the original had that open world, but then when you went into missions, they were practically just levels. But yeah. I don't know, are they going to do that for this one? Because it's Avalanche Studios, I guess they're the kind of main developer on it. And they did Mad Max, where you didn't really have those levels.
But if you got out of the car, say you were playing, because you play Mad Max, Rich?
A bit.
Even that or Just Cause or whatever, you get out of a car in an open world game, but it plays like Doom. Like, that's...
I mean, that's awesome.
Fun, right? Like, exploring an open world in that engine, like, that's kind of weird. It's very, like, it's very up-close and visceral kind of combat. If you start spreading that across an open world, I don't even know if it works.
Yeah, I suppose you're right.
To kind of have these more, like, specific levels and ways that the enemies come at you and stuff. Yeah. I think an open world Doom is both fascinating and weird.
Random encounters, though, I guess. Mm. But you need some kind of thing to draw it all together, don't you?
Yeah.
Perhaps.
Like, you could still kind of have an open... I don't know. You can't really. I'm talking myself out of it.
I'm hoping that's the thing. I assume you use the vehicle to get from place to place and they have well-designed areas wherever you get to.
Is there any gameplay, like, trailer out for Rage 2?
They've got the compilation stuff, so they sort of just, like, blurred it all together. But in terms of, like, the flow of that game, like, I wonder how much they'll fall back on formulaic aspects
again,
of open world stuff.
They kind of pulled it off on Mad Max, though, because when you were just out in the desert, you didn't have much ammo, so you couldn't use guns, and that game was very much focused around the melee combat. So they had to kind of do it there. You either had the vehicle combat, or you had to get out and just punch fools to death. But then you were kind of just driving from mini sandbox to mini sandbox, and then engaging in these kind of, they weren't levels, but they were intricately detailed to make the most of that combat system. Yeah. So I can see this doing the same thing.
I would hope so. I think that they'll have to do, something. They have to offer you something. I don't know how much I think the Doom combat works if you don't have an authored sense of, like, level design. Some of the other ones I had down were, like, Crackdown 3, which is, like,
Surely that is going to be just
the game that invented fun collectibles.
That is one big hub.
That's
going to
be so old school.
I just think it'll just be absolutely soaked in, like, random gems to go and pick up.
Give me the orbs.
Yeah,
I want the orbs. Okay. Agents of Mayhem, if that was what it was called, didn't scratch that itch. And I want the orb itch scratch.
I also want that. I mean, I was reading something online that broke down the reason the orbs were so satisfying is because every time you went into one, it was like a little mini firework display, like popped open. And that pop was so satisfying.
Yeah, it was.
And I got lost in a whole thread of people talking about the most satisfying loot box opens as to which Overwatch was in there. And the Rainbow Six Siege, because you got the little packets.
That's honestly the dirt worst, in my opinion.
Worst?
Yeah, because it takes ages to unlock. Then you rip it up and it's like, boom.
Should I like open little vacuum seal?
No,
bags.
I don't, Scott.
Why
I really
not,
don't.
Mate?
Don't you dare compare my sacred orbs to loot boxes.
But I'm not, but I'm just saying, if you're going to talk about satisfaction of opening things, opening a Ziploc bag is fun.
Rich, stop us. Please.
Or agree with me.
Me.
Ziploc bags.
I can't.
All the way.
Do you know what is really good, though? Just collectibles in general. Can we talk about collectibles some
more? See, that's the thing. That's like a wider thing. That thing puts me off sometimes, because that's the thing that makes me go, I'm never going to see all these.
Did you play the Spyro remake?
I did, but I didn't get all the gems. I just didn't do it. I'm playing through the Sly Cooper trilogy at the minute, because we mentioned it on the podcast the other day. And that's got a whole lot of bottles that you collect to open a special vault, and then Bentley's all like, you need to help with the thing. And I'm like, I'm never going to do that, Bentley, mate. I just want the treasure.
Crackdown 3 is not for you.
It's not, I don't think, although I want to get some orbs. Let's leap into Metro Exodus, because having played a little bit of that and looked at it online, it is an open-world game, like 2033, like Last Light. But, like, in terms of, you've got open-world elements, but it's kind of a wide linear thing. So I guess in terms of the company it's keeping here, it stands out a bit, because you do have more of a hands-on, authored approach, but it's kind of, they've got these massive levels or whatever.
Yeah. I get the feeling Metro is going to be very story-focused. It's just going to be like...
It's very lore heavy as well.
Yeah.
They need to paint a whole picture of the state of the world kind of thing. And plus, I kind of hope that this does for Metro what The Witcher did. Sorry, what Witcher 3 did for The Witcher. Because you've just got so many people are interested in this one, and the graphic looks gorgeous and all that.
Gets
kind of
people
stuff.
Into it. Yeah, I hope so.
But I think that means that they'll have to then take the time to deliver the story and say what Artyom's been up to across the last two games and stuff. But when me and Jules played it, a lot of the combat encounters were like you come up to a big open expanse with buildings and whatever, and then it was kind of just like a combat sandbox, kind of like Last of Us. Mm. It was like enemies with guns are in here somewhere, and depending on if you take them out stealthily or you go down a certain route or you hide yourself or whatever, that triggers them in different ways. Which again, I think that's kind of like an open world approach, but you're sort of compartmentalizing it, and I quite like that.
Yeah, it's kind of like what Crysis and I guess the original Far Cry used to do, where you would have this sort of big combat encounter and you would just make your own way through it. I quite like that, especially for games like Metro, which are very lore heavy, story heavy, and they don't... In the Metro games, you cover quite a lot of ground and it's difficult to get from place to place. Obviously, you have to use the Metros because the top world is like, it will kill you to death.
It will.
So I like that with, by the sounds of it, Metro Exodus is sort of keeping the threat of the world alive by not allowing you to just go wherever you want.
They do have that. They have big monsters, and then they have the whole, like, but man is the real enemy, like the standard sort of go-to. So the last game that I have on here, which could be the most experimental of the lot, is Death Stranding. And that's not necessarily a 2019 game, but so up in the air. What do we even expect to see from Death Stranding?
This is going to be all over the place. It's going to be bad. Bat, heck, crazy.
Bat pooping, bat. YouTube safe, crazy. I mean, the only thing that Kojima put out there was that his general mandate, his general mentality and philosophy for the game was sticks and ropes. He said that life is sticks and ropes, and you either have ropes that bring things together, bring people together, bring communities together, or you have a stick which bats them away.
Yeah.
And so he said that you can apply that to multiplayer gaming, you can apply that to the philosophies that he's had late in his past games, and characters as well. What?
So it's going to have an element of choice.
I think at the beginning it'll be like rope or stick, and then that'll literally be it. But assumedly, like, he's got, I mean, who the hell even knows? But like, if you have followed the rumors online, it seems like he's trying to get other players to be dynamically plugged into other people's sessions, kind of like Souls. And so they might, like, I don't, might as well mention Souls again. But different players potentially.
I was really struggling not to mention Souls, by the way, when you were talking about like kind of interconnected worlds that you can travel through however you want. I'm like,
well, here's the thing, Dark Souls. One, in my opinion, that kind of world design is my bag, baby.
Right.
I just need it in my life.
I mentioned Dark Souls on nearly every podcast. I did almost get away with a whole week of not mentioning it, but
Dark Souls is an open world game.
Yes, that's what I was going to
say. Oh my god, it is!
Yeah, but that also fits like everything that we just said. Like, it's kind of, it's authored, like you can tell that they took their time. I don't think there are any procedurally generated elements in it. I don't think the devs just hit a button and let it populate. I think they designed every single bit of it, but you're free to go wherever you want, and you can climb, and you can take your time. When you have unlockables, but to get there, you can explore. Very exploration heavy, but it's also very focused. Is Dark Souls the future of the industry? Is what I'm saying.
It's not. Do you know why?
Why not?
Because Dark Souls 2 and Dark Souls 3 didn't even follow like the same route. Really, that was didn't have the same interconnectivity.
Three went back to the interconnected world. It was 2 that ditched it.
But even in three, you had the sort of first kind of hub world sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? More linear than 1.
I guess Demons though, like Demons and 2 both had like the either way, they had like the hub world.
Death Stranding.
I kind of think that, obviously coming out of Phantom Pain, if I go off what Kojima already said about, like, once you've experienced open world game design, it's hard to go back. Assumedly, and we've already seen, like, some gameplay footage, Death Stranding is this massive exploration heavy. You're meant to be a courier, couriering things.
Carrying a wee baby.
A wee babs and a whole bunch of different, like, crates and stuff. So
I hope it's totally mental. I hope it doesn't follow any gameplay tropes. I hope it's completely random and amazing.
You don't watch a trailer from here till release date. You sit down and
the weird ones.
Now you have, but you don't watch anything else. Turn it on, Death Stranding boots up. What kind of game is it? Is it a third person shooter?
It starts off with a very linear intro, and you're playing through Norman's life, and then everything goes to hell. And you wake up in some kind of fever dream, and you can just do what you want.
Just let you go walk, work
they're
on
like,
the Walking Dead.
They're like, Norman, we want you to deliver this baby, but you can, if you want, go and find this tentacle monster over there if you want.
And Troy Baker's in there somewhere. Because
yeah, I should design games.
I mean, I almost guarantee if we put a bet on now, you'll not be that far off, because the so far what we've seen has been ridiculous.
Yeah. Tentacle monsters.
Do you think it'll be very formulaic open world or something else
I have no idea what this game's going to be, and I kind of don't want to know.
It's
love
exciting.
The mystery.
We do know it's open world, though.
We do know it's open world, yeah. But I mean, I know a lot of people didn't like Phantom Pain's open world, which is kind of crazy to me, because I actually liked it, apparently.
Who are these people?
Because there's lots of open space in it, and you're essentially just kind of riding over this desert or whatever to get to kind of like
these, the map itself, yeah, not the fact that it was open world.
Yes, the map itself. Which I kind of get.
I would
get,
totally back that.
But I like that. I like the downtime. I don't like
it
when... It
looked a bit more real, didn't it?
Yeah, sort of, yeah.
It did, yeah.
I don't like it when everything is just full on all the time. Sometimes you need the downtime and the kind of time for reflection between these big...
Red Dead has
it's
that.
True.
Red Dead does that.
Red Dead does that really well, and they found a way in between mission markers to give you the random encounters where you go hunting or you do whatever. Yeah. In Metal Gear, I was just like going to the map and dropping in where I need to go and then zoom out and drop back in over here. I was never exploring very much. I guess that's why they give you the horse and stuff. But yeah, I guess I would totally back that. I don't know if Kojima's... I mean, obviously it was his first crack at an open world, so assumedly him and the rest of the team at Kojima Productions can do something amazing with the alien weird tentacle madness that is
what do you think it's going to be like?
Exactly. You guys can let us know what you think down in the comments below, or find us on social media. This has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Hello. You changed it again, Scott.
And also joined by Rachel Shackleton.
Thank you for listening.
I'll catch you guys next time.
Bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.